I would like to start our seminar. This time it's one of the lectures of the Fred Jelinek series, and I'm very happy to welcome here Professor Roberto Navelli from Sapienza University, Rome. And I would like to ask Jan Hajic to introduce Professor Navelli.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm also very glad to have Roberto here. As you probably know, Roberto Navelli is a full professor of computer science at the Sapienza University, as Eva has said. He's the leader of the Sapienza NLP group. He's probably most well-known and famous for the BabelNet project, a project which has been highlighted in, for example, the Time magazine, and also he is the winner of several prizes, most notably at the Artificial Intelligence Journal Prize, and also he is the holder of two consecutive ERC grants, and one of them you see on the slide, and also the previous one was on WordSense disambiguation, and he's also pioneering the use of language resources and NLP technology in the commercial world. So he's the co-founder of Babelscape, a company that enables natural language processing and natural language understanding in actually many languages. So the important feature of BabelNet is it's massively multilingual, and I hope he will talk about this and other things in his talk. Also, I should say that looking to the future, he is the program chair of ACL, actually ACL IJSC NLP, the Asian ACL next year. I hope that everyone will help him in reviewing, because we know how hard it is to get all these thousands of papers and reviews in. So Roberto, I think that's all I have to say. And now the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. So I'm so happy, and it's a pity that we have to do it online, but at least we're here. So thanks again. So in this talk, I'm dealing with actually two of the three main tasks in natural language understanding, namely semantic role labeling and semantic parsing, but specifically how to scale these tasks multilingually. This is joint work with four among PhD students and postdocs, Simone Coni, Andrea Di Fabio, Regina Bloschmi, and Rocco Tripodi. And I'll start with an example. I like to give examples where machine translation doesn't work, but of course, we could find many of these examples in all tasks. But I think these are interesting examples because they clarify how hard it is for a machine to understand words in context and disambiguate them and process the information that is available in text. Like if we say something like, I stood by the bank looking at the ships, we expect something like a riverbank, but actually a machine translation system, state of the art, understands a financial institution. And even if we give more context, we get the same result. So this is just one of the many examples that one could come up with to realize how hard it is to enable natural language understanding for machines. And I believe that there are three main tasks to enable explicit natural language understanding. So some kind of understanding which can be in a sense proven or shown as a hint that the machine understood the meaning of a text. The first one is word sense disambiguation. I've been doing word sense disambiguation for almost 20 years now, but I'm not talking about it today, even though yesterday I gave a talk on this topic at the multi-word expression and e-lexicography workshop at Colling. And so the first one is word sense disambiguation, where we have words in context, and we want the system to identify the most appropriate meanings for these words. Like, for example, fire here is an ambiguous word and needs to be disambiguated. So we don't shoot at programmers if we want to fire them from a company. And so we have to choose the right meaning, and the system has to do that. And normally you use a sense inventory from which the right sense of a given word has to be chosen. The second task is semantic rule labeling, where we perform some kind of shallow semantic parsing, which annotates the sentences at the predicate argument level. And so, for example, here we have an event that is triggered by the verb fire. And here we have a firing event. And we have some roles taken by some of the phrases or some of the words in the sentence, like we have an employer, an employee, a position, and so on. This is the result of a system that's been around for that's been around for some years. Now, no more state of the art, but unfortunately, the system here chooses the wrong meaning of firing, and obviously, you don't do this for employees, as I said. But unfortunately, that's what the system understood: to shoot projectiles at. Like the employer is shooting projectiles for a certain business. So this is really not what we meant in our sentence. The third task is semantic parsing. So in semantic parsing, we aim at transforming text into a structured semantic representation. And so rather than just working at the level of the interaction between the predicate and the roles played by the various words in, or phrases in the sentence, we transform the sentence into a structured representation that makes explicit the connections between the various lexical items or phrases in the sentence. And so normally we produce a graph which represents the semantics of the text of the sentence, etc. So these three tasks, however, suffer from some issues. One is the paucity of resources and training data in most languages. This is unfortunately a recurring pervasive issue in natural language processing, but specifically in semantics, both lexical and sentence level semantics, we have issues of this kind, that many resources and training data are available either in English only or in a few languages. And this results in big performance gaps, unfortunately. And also another key issue that I find very challenging is the lack of shared semantics across languages. So what if we wanted to provide a representation that is independent of the language that is used to express a certain concept or set of concepts? And so in this talk, I will address these issues. And as I said, I'll focus on SRL and semantic parsing, the second and third task that I introduced, but I will not talk about word sense disambiguation, which is actually another key problem, especially if we want to scale multilingually. We have two papers that might be of interest and that we presented recently or are presenting next year at AAAI about how to scale word sense disambiguation to many languages. One is about label propagation, the one presented at ICCAI this year that actually will be presented in January because of the conference postponement. And another one on creating silver data for word sense disambiguation that will be published soon as a preprint and presented at AAAI next year. So now I'm presenting here three different works combined into a single talk that address the issue of how to scale semantic role labeling and semantic parsing to many languages and how to represent, to provide a representation for predicates and roles that is independent of the language. And this is a verb atlas. So I'll start from semantic role labeling. Very briefly, an overview, but I guess that given the work by Hahich and colleagues, I guess this is very well known, but very briefly sake of the presentation, let me introduce SRL. So this is the task of automatically determining who did what to whom, where, when, and how, ideally. And so if we have a sentence like the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog, we want to identify the predicate or the predicates that are expressed in the sentence. We want to disambiguate this predicate and choose the most relevant meaning, sense for this predicate. And normally we have to use a resource that provides all the possible meanings for this predicate. We want to identify the arguments for this predicate. And in this case, we're using spans, but we could use dependencies to do that. So we could identify the head of this phrase, like fox here or dog here or over and so on. And finally, we want to classify the arguments using a set of semantic roles. So in this case, for example, arg 0 and arg 2, if we know what these mean in the jump 3 predicate. Or for example, if we want to give explicit meaning, we could say this is who and this is over what. So we have these four subtasks to perform in SRL. Now let's talk about the role of syntax in SRL. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Syntax can be a strong indicator for many of these subtasks because we can use part of speech tagging and lemmatization and syntax-based rules, dependency neighbors and syntactic relations to help the various tasks, subtasks in SRL. However, there's also a disadvantage that in order to perform these tasks like part of speech tagging or syntactic analysis, we need to train systems, currently neural architectures to identify, to extract this information. And unfortunately, creating, performing annotations at the syntactic level is expensive. And it's not always the case that we can perform with the best high standard in many of these tasks. For example, for low resource languages, part of speech tagging performs pretty well in English. But in many cases, for example, in Chinese, we get performance that is slightly below 90%, which is good, but not excellent. Or if we care about the labeling in syntactic parsing, the quality of the label attachment is not so high if we care about the labels that are morphology aware. So, these hints, these cues that could be used for improving SRL might be might help, but might also be problematic in some languages. So we wanted to address this point and try to find a solution with the current developments in deep learning that avoid the use of syntax and part of speech information to perform multilingual semantic role labeling, and particularly to reduce the gap in performance that affects different languages compared to the English language. So if we, for example, evaluate state-of-the-art SRL systems presented last year on the gold standard, on the Cornell 2009 gold standard for semantic role labeling, we see that the error rate that we obtain in English is very far from, is much lower than the one that we have with state-of-the-art systems in many other languages, and that the performance gap can be up to almost 11%. And on average, so there's a gap of up to 11%. And the average error rate is 15-16%, which is much higher than the one that we get in English. And why is that? This is because many of these languages, in a sense, are lower resource. So they don't have as many training sentences and suffer from the paucity of resources and training data. So our question here was, is it possible to significantly close this gap and reduce this performance gap between English and low resource languages? And our answer is yes. And in order to reduce this gap, we don't need syntax, even though using syntax would further help, of course. However, we know that this is not always the case or not always possible. And so this is work that we just presented at Calling, co-authored by Simone Konya. The idea is to set a strong and robust baseline for future innovations. So as I said, nothing prevents us from adding syntactic information and further improving the results, but we wanted to show that it's possible to perform SRL, multilingual SRL, and reduce this performance gap without using syntactic information. So what's the method? It needs to be language agnostic, because otherwise we couldn't perform SRL in many languages. And this is the overall architecture. We have an input sentence. And at the input level, we don't use any specific syntax-specific feature. So we don't have syntactic features. We don't have information about predicate embeddings or predicate indicator flags, as is commonly used in many other SRL systems. We have a we represent the words in latent form. And then we have a predicate-aware, a layer for producing predicate-aware word representations. So representations that are aware of the predicate they have to relate to. Then we use this information to perform predicate identification, to say this word is or is not a predicate, and to, if it's a predicate, to disambiguate the predicate according to the resource PropBec or any other resource that we want to use as the predicate inventory. Then we use this representation to perform argument identification and classification. And here we use, we produce predicate specific argument representations. Here we, I'll go into details now, but in this module, we produce representations that, as I said, are aware of the predicate, but specifically of the sense of the predicate and the position of the predicate. While in this module here, the information, the relationship between the predicate and the argument is made explicit. Now let's go into more details. So this is the part in which we just start from the sentence and produce, bring together the various word pieces into a single representation that produces a latent representation for the word that is contextualized using transformer models like BERT, XLM, Roberta, basically. Now that we have our representations, our latent representations for the various words, we move on to the next layer, which is the predicate-aware word representation layer. And so this module takes each word and uses basically a BILE-STM to produce a representation as output that, that of course depends on the context, which is then used to perform predicate identification. And based on the output of predicate identification, also to perform predicate disambiguation. And so if it's determined to be a predicate, then it's also disambiguated. Once we know for each predicate that was identified, for example, here we have two predicates in this example. So if once the two predicates are identified, for each of these predicates, we perform, we move on to this layer here. So we work at the interface between the predicate and the argument. And for each word given as input, we provide the predicate-aware representation by concatenating each latent representation of a word in context with the predicate representation itself. So actually this should be blue because the case with the predicate is to concatenate the predicate with itself, while all the others are concatenations of the predicate and the word in context. So these are two latent representations. And so as a result, we obtain a latent representation of a word of a potential argument aware of the predicate we're working with. This means that we have to repeat this for each and every predicate. So assuming we have two different predicates, we'll have two separate evaluations in a all, of course, aggregated into a single matrix, in which we concatenate the different predicates because we want two different predicate-aware representations for each given word. As a result, after a BILE-STM, we exploit each of these the resulting representations to perform argument identification and classification. And so this is an architecture that exploits the transformer and exploits BILE-STMs to perform the four subtasks in SRL. And here we present an evaluation based on dependency-based English SRL, but we also have an evaluation on span-based SRL that I don't have time to present in this talk. So we tried we tried different ways to contextualize words, and actually we even used ELMO to perform a comparison against BERT. So we used ELMO, we used BERT, both when frozen or fine-tuned to the task, and we also used XLM Roberta. As you can see, our model improves over alternatives using the same transformer model. And this is on English, dependency-based SRL, and achieves up to 92.4.6, depending on whether we use BERT, fine-tuned, or XLM Roberta on the English SRL task. And this is F1 score. So this is to show that it's not only the transformer model that helps, which clearly does, but also there's a further improvement, which is the result of using an all-in-one architecture with the various features that I just presented. And now we move on to the most interesting part, which is the multilingual and cross-lingual SRL evaluation, where we compare against Hey et al. 2019, which is the syntax-aware state-of-the-art before our system. And so you can see here that the best results across the board in various languages are achieved when using XLM Roberta, and that's because XLM Roberta is inherently multilingual and has a large representation. And so you can see that when fine-tuning, you get very high performances in all languages. And all of them are around or slightly below 90% F1 score. If we perform a zero-shot cross-lingual SRL experiment, which is only possible in Spanish and Catalan because the same predicate argument inventory is used in the two languages, we train on Catalan and we test on Spanish, or we train in Spanish and we test on Catalan, we see that there are promising results that are obviously below the ones obtained when training in the same language, but still above 80%. So this is to show that it's possible with the current technology and deep learning architectures to achieve higher, to reduce the performance gap across languages in SRL. If we now move on to semantic parsing, we have different issues to address. We decided to use AMR, abstract mean representation, because it's a common representation that is used for semantic parsing. As you can see here, you have a sentence from the Little Prince clapped his hands, and you have a structured representation, AMR structured representation of the sentence, where predicates are obtained based on PropBank, as is done in SRL, in, let's say, at least in Cornell datasets for SRL. And we have relations with other parts of the sentence. This is, in this case, the prints and the hands, and also other relations between the various arguments. And so this is the representation we would like to produce. And it's easy, relatively easy to a certain extent, to produce such a representation in English, because there's quite a large training data set for AMR parsing in English. However, the question is, whether there is data to train a system and perform semantic parsing, AMR semantic parsing in non-English languages. And second, whether we can use AMR itself in other languages. AMR is not exactly an interlingua because it's heavily biased towards English. There's also some work talking about this issue. And also it makes extensive use of PropBank frame sets, which PropBank is English based, even though there are other versions of PropBank, other editions of PropBank in other languages. However, it's also true that AMR explicitly aims at abstracting away from syntactic idiosyncrasies. And also it should be ideally agnostic about how the meanings is derived from language, from text. So it's not an interlingua, but in a sense, it's close to being an interlingua. And some guidelines could be adjusted to cover cross-lingual aspects. For example, one could decide not to use PropBank for the predicates, but to use other inventories, predicate inventories and rule sets in other languages. What happens if we try to use AMR in other languages? Let's look at again at this example. So if you translate this sentence into Italian and Spanish, for example, we see that some of the obvious words that we find in English, like his, for example, are not expressed in Italian or in Spanish. For example, his is not expressed, is implicit. We say clapped the hands, basically, and not his hands. And so this relationship between hand and prince is only implicit in the sentence. Or in Spanish, we don't even have the explicit, even though principito is a small prince, this is all in a single word. And so this small modifier is not made explicit, or at least it's explicit at the morphological level. And so it's harder to, in a sense, make it explicit through a node, or at least we should do that in some way. Well, this is the English representation. So we could use AMR as a proxy or as a proxy to an interlingua, and ideally assume that we can produce an English AMR for the for sentences written in any language. And so given these two sentences to produce the English representation, AMR representation, as the semantic representation for these sentences. Obviously, we have to accept this assumption, but it's something that is better than not being able to perform semantic parsing in other languages, at least at this stage. Currently, in many cases, there's the need to perform explicit or implicit word-to-node AMR alignment in English AMR parsers. This is hard to project across languages because, of course, these, if as I showed earlier, there are some nodes that are not alignable in other languages, and so this alignment issue becomes complex if we want to use the same representation, but we want to align it to translations to other sentences in other languages that don't use the same syntactic structure or lexical or morphological structure. And also, as I said, there's no cross-lingual AMR data, or at least very little, only for testing. So there's no clear way how to train a system to perform the task that we just mentioned. So the task in which we have a sentence and we produce the English AMR. And so we addressed this issue in an EMNLP paper we presented recently, joint with Regina Bloschmi and Rocco Tripodi. The idea was to dispose of AMR alignments and enable cross-lingual AMR using silver data. And so we presented two different ways of creating silver data for cross-lingual AMR. And then the paper also has interesting qualitative insights about how our system called Excel AMR handles language divergences, but there's no time here because I also wanted to introduce VerbAtlas, and so I needed to squeeze only some of the results into this presentation. I'll first give you a model overview. So we have various sentences which are translations of the English sentence. We perform, for a given sentence, we perform first a sec-to-sec concept identification. So we just produce the set of concepts that will make up the graph, the AMR graph to be produced. And then we will use a biofine attention strategy to connect these concepts with relations that will create the final graph. And so this is the architecture for the concept identification phase. So we have a sentence in the language of interest. For example, this is Italian. And so we have the little prince clapped the hands, because this is the article. So clapped would be the hands, literally. And so we give this as input to a BILSTM encoder. Then on the other side, we have a decoder, which produces the set of concepts that we want to be part of our AMR, English AMR representation. So the decoder starts with an S and then has to produce all the possible nodes of the graph without connecting them. Then we exploit the encoder. So once we produce, we give as input this sentence, we can create a context representation using the encoder attention using an MLP layer to obtain a distribution over the output vocabulary. At the same time, for each token that is produced as output, we exploit. So this MLP is also informed by the state, state representation, the hidden state representation of the token of the time step that we produced at a certain time step. So basically, we exploit a certain the context representation together with the current token state representation to decide what the next token will be, what the next token will be produced at the decoding level. On this softmax layer here. And so we have an output vocabulary distribution here. However, this is not enough because in some cases, we need to decide that we want to copy the token itself and not just to generate a new one. And so basically we also use the very same information to decide that we want to decide whether at a specific time step we want to copy information or generate a new token. And then we combine this information to obtain the final distribution. So this is the architecture for the concept identification part. Then for the relation, instead for the relational identification part, we use a bifine attention to similar to what is done also with dependency parsing to determine the which relations to produce between pairs of nodes and which label to output. And as I said, this is for the architecture, but then we need to produce data for training that gives us input a sentence in a certain language and expects to produce a certain representation in English AMR. And so we need to have a training data set that comes with, for example, Italian sentences and English AMR representations. And so to do this, we use two different strategies. One is based on parallel sentences, so we need a parallel corpus. And so the advantage is that we use gold translated sentences from a parallel corpus. The disadvantage is that we have silver parsed AMR graphs because we provide these sentences, the English sentence as input to our English based AMR parser, and we produce the AMR graph that we associate with all the sentences. The other alternative is to use machine translated sentences, in which the advantage, actually this is the disadvantage, sorry. The disadvantage is that we have silver translated sentences, and the advantage is that we have gold standard AMR graphs because these come from the data set for which the association between AMR graphs and English sentences was made manually. So let's look at the first case, parallel sentences and silver AMR. So we have a parallel corpus like this one. We have sentences that are parallel. We parse the English sentence and we associate the gold translations with the silver AMR, English AMR. This is the first case. In the second case instead, we have a gold AMR graph, English AMR graph associated with the English sentence. And we perform automatic translations of the English sentence into other languages. In order to avoid noise, we back translate the sentences into English and then use a filtering step to see how the representation, whether the representation of the target language sentence, the target language translation, is closest to the representation of the original English sentence. So once we back translate, we want the back translation to be closest to the original English sentence, like this one. If it's not, we just remove this training item and we don't provide it as part of the training dataset. And then we associate the gold AMR graph with the translated sentences. And so now we have two ways of producing training data for cross-lingual AMR parsing. And we test on the AMR 2.4 translations data datasets that was provided by Damonte and Cohen in four different languages, Chinese, German, Italian, Spanish, and we use Smatch F1 to evaluate the performance. We used Europarl as the parallel corpus and AMR 2 for the other approach in which we use gold AMR graphs. And we also tried different variants of our system, of our Excel AMR architecture, in which we either use a zero-shot setting, so we train in English and test in any other language, or we go from the, we are language specific, so we train in one language and test in the same language, or we train in all languages and test in any language of interest, or we train in English plus the language of interest and test on the language of interest itself. And here we report the best results. And we can see that AMR Eager, which is the only cross-lingual AMR parser from the literature that we compare, we can compare with, obtains results that are in many cases similar to our zero shot performance, or slightly better or better in Chinese, but normally lower than Excel AMR, in which we use the translation approach, but also lower when we use the parallel corpus approach. However, better results are used when we translate our corpus, but use gold AMR, because the gold AMR is what we want to produce, while the input can be noisier. And so this is normally a better strategy. And so now I'm moving on to the final part of the talk, in which, so now we have shown what to do, how to scale SRL and semantic parsing multilingually. Obviously, much more work can be done. And one of these is how to provide a truly semantic representation that is independent, or as independent as possible, from the language we are working with. For example, with semantic parsing, we saw that the representation is unfortunately English specific, because we're using PropBank, English PropBank, or in SRL, we're also using PropBank. So, or even if you use another representation, another predicate inventory, we have the issue that these inventories don't talk to each other, and or there's a lack of multilingual data. And so each of these tasks suffer from a different issue. But in general, we have this issue that there's no way to provide a language-independent semantics. So to address this issue, we first analyze the resources that are available for predicate argument representation, and particularly for SRL. But these are, as I said, also used for semantic parsing. So the three main resources that are around are FrameNet, VerbNet, and PropBank. Both FrameNet and VerbNet suffer from incomplete coverage. So they don't cover the whole set of possible predicates or frames that can be expressed in, for example, in English. This makes it hard to create a general purpose system. PropBank and FrameNet suffer from, in a sense, or at least have the feature of providing predicate specific role semantics. So the roles are have to be interpreted in the context of the given predicate or frame. And so, which is something that is not true for VerbNet, because the roles in VerbNet are independent of the predicate. PropBank and VerbNet make it hard to transfer information across predicates, because the predicates are, in a sense, coarse-grained senses of verbs. And so there's no easy way to generalize to a certain frame, as instead is done in FrameNet, where all the verbs that have to do with a certain scenario are clustered together. And finally, all these resources are tied to specific languages, mostly English, but there are many other alternatives in other languages. However, it's a quite heterogeneous scenario. And so last year at YAMLP, we introduced a new resource called VerbAtlas, joint work with Andrea Di Fabio and Simone Conia. And so what we did was relatively simple, yet effective. So we manually clustered all the WordNet verbal synsets into frames. As a result of this, we could bring together all those synsets that have similar scenes and participants to a given action. So for example, the frame of eat bite includes all the synsets that contain action, that express actions of different kinds of eating or biting. Or another frame, the frame of cooking, includes all the kinds of cooking. And so all the types of frame net, of WordNet synsets that have to do with this frame. Also, we had to do something about the roles. We wanted cross-frame roles. So roles that have a semantics that is independent of the specific predicate. So we decided to go for VerbNet roles, but we reduced the set of roles to about 25 roles. And reconducted those the excluded roles to the existing ones, because many of them could be aggregated with the ones that we selected. And so now we have a relatively small set of roles and a small set of frames. So we have a frame level organization. The role set, as I said, is inspired by VerbNet. And for example, in the eat byte frame, only some of these roles are activated, of course, like agent, patient, and location, but not instrument or, well, instrument could be activated, but you know, result, source, and others. Or cooking, for example, you have an agent, a patient, an instrument, a result, but you don't have a source, for example. So now let me compare Verbatas to FrameNet, VerbNet, and PropBank. And I think this comparison is easier if we go through examples. For example, here, the cat swiftly ate the fish and the cook baked the cake are, let's say, the semantics is identified by the main predicate, eating and baking. And so these are two different frames in Verbatlas, cooking and eating byte. And the same for FrameNet, where you have different frames, but the role is the same. The role of the cook and the cat is still the agent, while in FrameNet you have different roles. And same for patient here. So the food and the ingestible are patients. Or comparing to VerbNet, you have the issue that while the frame, the roles are comparable because we use the same a subset of VerbNet's roles, we have the issue that I mentioned that the frames are, in a sense, the clusters in VerbNet are a bit less expressive because they are based on a syntactic basis, while the frames in Verbatas are based on a semantic basis. So conquered and nourishes are semantically totally different, and so they belong to different frames. Compared to PropBank, you have the advantage of having informative role labels. In PropBank, you have arg0, arg1, which, as I said, are specific to the predicate sense, which is eat one and smell one in these two examples. While here you have the agent, patient, stimulus, and experiencer, which are cross-frame and understandable independently of the frame. Some statistics. These are in comparison with the various resources. So you have full coverage of verbal meanings, which is something that addresses the issue of, for example, FrameNet and VerbNet, because we clustered all the verbal synsets in WordNet. You have coarse frames. So we only have less than 500 frames compared to a large number of verbs in PropBank and a higher number of frames in FrameNet anyway, even though they don't have full coverage. And the argument, the set of argument roles is compact. So you only have 25. It's true that in PropBank you only have 6 proto roles, but it's also true that arg0, arg1, arg2 are not so meaningful. So this is another advantage over PropBank that we took from VerbNet, as I said. Verbatlas is also linked to WordNet and BubbleNet, and that's inherent because Verbatlas is a set of frames that cluster WordNet synsets. And because WordNet synsets are part of BubbleNet, they are included, they are linked to Verbatlas. But we also provide the linkage to PropBank, because each PropBank predicate that occurs in Cornell is has been linked to a Verbatas frame. As a result, we can train with Cornell converted to Verbatas frames, which is something that we did, but I don't have time to present here. This is an easy example with multilinguality enabled by Verbatas and BabelNet, because if you take different sentences, which are one the translation of the others, you have, in this case, the same scene set across languages, smelling. You have, or near synonyms. You have the same frame. Even if you use near synonyms or other scene sets that belong to the same frame, it doesn't matter because all these verbs here express the same semantic frame, which is independent of the language. And the arguments are the same, because these are semantic arguments, semantic roles that are independent of the language. And so the experiencer and the stimulus don't depend on the specific language prop bank or resource, because they are language independent. And so in conclusion, I could present quickly, I'm sorry, but at least I hope thoroughly, as much as possible, three different approaches to enabling multilinguality in natural language understanding. And so we reduce the gap from English to any other language in SRL with a full-fledged neural architecture, with state-of-the-art in six languages, robust in low-resource settings. We proposed two different ways to produce silver data that improve the performance in cross-lingual semantic parsing. And we obtained a state-of-the-art in in English plus four non-English languages like Italian, Spanish, German, and Chinese. As future work, we would like to integrate resources like BubbleNet into the process of creating AMR representations. And finally, I also put forward a resource that is available online and can also be downloaded and used to represent frames in a way that is independent of the language, and therefore scaling predicate resources and role representations across languages. And also thanks to linkage to existing resources like PropBank and BabelNet and WordNet, you can use any training data that is around with VerbAtlas. So in the future, we would like to scale multilingually. A spoiler is that this week, if everything goes well, we would like to release a new version of BabelNet. So you will see an announcement with 500 languages and 20 million synsets. So 4 million synsets more than the previous version, and double number of languages, more or less. And that is more or less all. And I thank you for the attention. And these are some links to our work. Thanks a lot.
Well, just virtually, thank you very much for